Hello. This is the November SVCB meeting, 23rd anniversary meeting. Yeah, and I don't know where the running microphone is, but Rob knows. I think he said he has it. He has it. Okay. So we have introductions coming up. And I am Mike Easley, the president.
Steve Nakagawa, board member.
Rob Turner.
And Sam.
Sam Chen from Saratoga.
Judy Polacek from Mountain View, treasurer.
Thank you.
Yeah, who did you get? Who did you get?
The front table here.
All of them?
Yeah.
Okay. Okay.
You were all at the front table then?
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. You need to go over and touch them on the shoulder.
Okay.
And hand them the microphone. Go ahead.
Hey, thanks. Alice McGrath.
David Hoffman and new guide dog Calvin.
Phyllis Sintas, San Jose.
Suzanne Smith from Sunnyvale.
Art Takahara, Mountain View.
Roger Peterson, Mountain View.
Yeah. Albert Chapson, Los Gatos.
I'm Bev Clifford, goodies chair from San Jose, and I would like to announce that we have 4 months left for people to bring goodies. They're April, May, June, and November, so step right up, everybody.
Michelle McGrew, fundraising chair from Mountain View.
Barbara Dickinson, Mountain View.
Julie Lovins, Mountain View.
Donna Sanchez, lunch person.
Leanne Nakagawa, San Jose.
Good morning. This is Vic Clifford, San Jose.
This is Carol Ann Owens, Mountain View.
Good morning, everyone. This is John Kanzi here at Monta Vista Terrace in Mountain View, and I welcome everybody to the November 20th meeting for 2010.
Hi there, Charlie Stein, the Can Crusher, and thanks for your help.
Yeah.
One and only.
Lupe Medrano, Media Pass President, San Jose.
John McNulty, Sunnyvale.
Yes.
Hi, my name's Cornell Wade, San Jose.
Travis Loesch, San Jose.
Alan Jones, Sunnyvale, helping Donna with lunch.
Okay. Eileen Skidmore, Hospitality Committee, and from Santa Clara.
Amy Shaw, Palo Alto.
Pamela Rao here at Monta Vista Terrace. Hi, everyone.
Naomi Grubb, Corresponding Secretary and Coffee Committee. If the coffee's good, I made it. If it's not, I didn't.
Don Wilcox, Hospitality, Palo Alto, and also involved in coffee. Same comment.
Your name, you also, your name and your...
Oh, I'm Jamie Guerra, and I'm a volunteer.
Thank you. Okay, now, what I will do is I will... Okay, Mike, that's all of the people.
Okay, thank you, Ellen. First, I want to thank Pam Rao for sort of rescuing us. Because there was a big party here last night, and the 200 people were somehow packed in this room. And so they took all the tables out, and they didn't bring them back. And so that's the way I understand it, at least. So there was a kind of a panicky time trying to get at least something in here for us. So I want to thank Pam very much for that. And I also want to give the floor to Alice McGrath for a short presentation.
Pardon? You have a...
Okay, so what we'd like to do is actually do an acknowledgement for one of our members who has done a tremendous amount of work for this chapter over a period of time. And that person is Julie. What Julie has done, and I think when it comes to people that do the work behind the scenes, you don't necessarily know the amount of effort and energy that goes into it. But she has been the person that has maintained the database, that's communicated with the office for CCB, that's kept track of dues, that has basically helped out with the printing of the newsletter, picking up mail through the post office, and she's quietly and efficiently done this for years and years. And now what she's done is passed on the baton, and we've taken all of those different tasks and split them up through many, many different people. But what I'd like to do is to really take a moment and acknowledge the work and the effort and the support that she's given to this chapter over the years. So if we can begin with a very warm round of applause. And a sincere note of gratitude.
Now we need a speech.
Does Julie want to say? Is Julie going to say anything?
Oh, microphone?
Yeah, hold on.
There.
Sounds like no.
She will.
I'm coming, Julie. I'm coming.
Alan, I'm here. Thank you. Okay, we have retrieved the microphone. Thank you all very much. It has been my pleasure to do this, various pieces of it since 1987. Actually, I don't think I started working quite that hard then, but as the years went on, this happened. My husband and I were among the founding members of this organization. Roger and Bernice were others, and Chris Gray, and I'm not sure I remember who else. If anybody else is here who's in that category, let me know. But there were six or eight of us who got together and started SVCB in 1987. That computes, doesn't it? And I decided within the last year or so that I'd better start handing over this stuff. It was in everybody's best interest that I did so, and I very much appreciate the efforts that people have made to take over the various little pieces and have a smooth transition. So thank you again.
Okay, Roger is our program chair. He's going to start the ball.
Hello. So this is kind of an acknowledgement too, and in a way, we're going to have Rob Turner talk about his recent trip to Taiwan, but. Before I do that, I want to acknowledge Sam Chin for one aspect of his many faceted contributions to our organization and to the blind community. back in, I think it was 1993, Sam arranged for me to go to Tokyo and speak at a conference. And I think there was another year when Greg and Julie went at Sam's because of Sam's arrangement. And some other folks that we know also went. So Sam, one of the things that Sam has been is an international liaison and has broadened several of our horizons around here and got us a chance to go places where we hadn't dared to go. So we're going to ask Rob to talk about his trip, and we got Sam there too, so that Sam can explain exactly what the trip was, or how the trip happened, or whatever, and fill in any details that Rob needs him to fill in. Thank you.
Hello.
Yeah.
Hello.
Good.
Oh, no. Good morning. This is Sam. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Thank you, Roger. Thank you for your nice introduction. In the mid-September, me, Rob, and then some folks went to a country, a tiny country that you might not find it on your map. On most of the map, you might not find it. And it's located, to about 1 hour of flight to the east of Hong Kong, the shopping heaven, yeah. And about 3 hours to the south of Tokyo. And the country, I remember about 50 years ago when I was a young kid, I remember, every day when I opened up the newspaper, all we saw is, we exported this much of banana, this much of sugar. And with that, people, residents there barely survive. And now Taiwan is more known to the computer chips. I would say most of, almost all desktop, laptop or netbook, all have, Taiwanese made chips in there. And, as Roger said, he didn't dare to go to some places where, were known to a lot of pirates over there, Taiwan and Japan. And now it's more civilized now. So we went there. I think that Rob and I went there. I would let him talk about that. One other thing that I want to mention is, we did climb up to the tallest building up until about 3, 4, 5 years ago. It's the sky rise. It's called Taipei 101. It's so tall, when I climbed up there, I couldn't open up my eyes. I feel it's so glary to me. Too close to the sun, I think. So now, I'll give the microphone to Rob and have him, share that his, experience there. Hi, Rob.
Okay, thanks. Let me take this mic. Okay, and I'm going to, Sam is sitting right next to me, so that if I get to a point where, he's going to clarify anything about the seminar or anything about Taiwan, then he'll be able to do that. So I'm going to start with, Sam initially contacted me probably in March, maybe April, originally, they were looking for maybe a keynote speaker or something. So the initial contact I had was, we're looking for a keynote speaker. Well, I knew that wasn't going to be me. So anyway, they finally got that. He finally said, no, that was a mistake. You're not expected to be the keynote speaker. You'll be a participant in the seminar. So that was okay. And so preparation. All right, so the next thing they need is a bio. Okay, no big deal. I had a bio I had written a little while ago and kind of liked it, so made a few changes to that. Okay, got that off to them. Okay, now we need an outline of your talk. Oh, gosh, what the heck am I going to talk about exactly? I knew they wanted to. This was a situation where the Taiwanese blind had been doing massage
protected. In other words, no others were not allowed to do that for a living. So it was a protected occupation. And about 3 years ago, that changed. The law was changed. They decided that's too discriminatory against everybody else. We can't just allow one segment of the population to have a monopoly. So consequently, this seminar, the idea was to show the local Taiwanese labor officials and other officials what the blind were doing, not only in the United States, but in Japan and also in Hong Kong. Those were the other two. Those were two of the other foreign speakers that they had. So we had four foreign speakers altogether, with Richard Ray, myself, Sam, and then Habino, a Japanese fellow, and an individual from Hong Kong. So that was okay. Get the outline down. You know, I'm not much of a writer, so it's always a little bit kind of procrastination. But that all got done, and then the next thing was a 2,000 word article for the program. Oh gosh, so anyway, but again, after a little bit of procrastination, it all finally worked out. So I had everything in place. So. Passport, not a problem. I already had the passport. So everything was all set. I didn't do any PowerPoint slides or anything like that, which I wish I would have been able to do a little more of that sort of thing just because of the language. But I think that they took my program article and did some translation, so they may have actually had some slides while I was speaking. I'm not too sure. But I'm getting a little ahead of myself. So that took care of the preparation. There wasn't much in terms of, getting ready. I had everything I needed. Well, I had to get the suit cleaned and everything, but, So, okay. Well, when are we leaving? What's the day? Oh, we're leaving on September 11th. Oh, that's an auspicious beginning for the trip. But everything went very smoothly. Other than my getting mixed up on the itinerary, for some reason, when I saw 140, I just assumed that was going to be, Saturday afternoon. But quickly learned my mistake. So we got to the airport, and everybody met up. Everything was great. So got on the airplane. And just checking things out and looked at the remote control, and I thought, my gosh, I've got more controls here. I could fly the plane with this remote control. There's so much stuff on it. Of course, it's not at all accessible. You have no idea what any of the buttons do. And, of course, there's a movie. It's one of these big 777s, so there's a big there's a movie screen in front of each seat, and, the only button I ever learned on the control, really, other than the channel up and down buttons for the music entertainment, was the call button. Other than that, I didn't get too much further, but it was definitely a trip. So the next thing was, it was a surprise to me, but they said, oh, and by the way, we must store your cane in the overhead bin. Yeah, and of course, the old NFB, I was basically raised in the NFB, essentially, back in the old days. So the old, so the old consciousness, should I fight this? Am I going to be uptight? And, all this. Well, I just kind of said, it's all right. I'm going to Taiwan. What the heck? I can just relax. So. And I was able to get around fine. I just had to walk slowly and take my time. And so that all worked out okay. So we leave. We don't get there, though, until Sunday morning. Of course, going across the international dateline, you lose a day. So 12-hour flight, a little bit of restlessness, that's for sure. You can't help that. So anyway, They had a, the conference was very nicely set up. It was all in one building. We were on the 8th floor. I understand this is sort of a little hotel that the university runs. Sam, maybe, do you want to clarify anything about that?
Okay. It's called International Convention Hall, and it's run by, you know, the Teacher University in Taiwan, and is sitting in the center of Taipei City, and the convention takes place on the 5th floor, and our accommodations are on the 8th floor. So everything is very well, I think, that equipped. Thank you.
Okay. So it's very convenient. Sunday morning. Now, of course, you get off the plane, and it's a whole different experience. It's hot. It's humid. And we were there. It turned out we were there during a particularly hot time too. It wasn't. It's not always that way. But for us, it was pretty warm. And the first thing you notice, like I said, you got that hot, humid air. And then, as you even just getting into the hotel. You recognize that there's a huge amount of traffic on the street where the hotel is located. And very shortly after, you also get to realize that there's a heck of a lot of people riding around on motorcycles, motor scooters. So for me, Taiwan was, that aspect of it was just, you know, it was kind of overwhelming in a way. I mean, I've never been in a city before where the traffic was so intense. I mean, there could be periods of time when you did not hear any let up at all. It was just like a constant almost, like a river practically, you know. So I was also impressed with Taipei in terms of its modern. It's a very modern city. We discovered that there was talking elevators at the airport, I think at the hotel itself. They do have some audible signals, although I don't think very many. A very modern subway that announces the stops in several languages. Very impressive with that. and I'll talk a little bit more about some of the other places that we visited as I continue on. Okay. So on Sunday morning, we started off with we were escorted by two very nice women that had been to college 30 years ago. They'd taken a Spanish class together. They were good friends. And so they went by their Spanish names. We had Olivia and Alicia. And they took us around. We began at a place called Forest Park. And it's a nice park right in the middle of everything. People were exercising. There was one that I tried, I guess it's for the feet. They walk on these stones, and they're, I would say, you know, they were pretty good sized stones. And when you walk on these things, I mean, I had to hold on to. They have rails on either side of this path so that you can hold on to them. But I don't know how they did it. I guess it would take a lot of getting used to. I know for me, it was challenging. My feet definitely got very sore as I walked through there. But and there was music. I think there was an Indonesian group that was celebrating their New Year's, and you know, very, very festive morning. From there we went and visited a Buddhist temple, and I noticed in the temple they had a wishing well, which was kind of interesting. So you just have to, you know, the old coins in the fountain kind of thing. And that was kind of interesting. Didn't get a lot out of the temple itself. Hard to get a feel for it, other than it was extremely busy on a Sunday morning. And after that, we went to a very nice Chinese restaurant. Had dim sum sorts of thing. Bamboo shoots we tried. Radish cakes. Octopus, you know, just, oh, another, one, I get back to the park. When I first got to the park, I heard this very strange sound, and I almost thought it was like, I don't know, like a geese, or I couldn't tell, not like geese, but like these, well, it turns out it was these very large insects that have this sort of a sound, and it was I just had never heard anything like that before. So that was kind of interesting. And after lunch, we went and saw the changing of the guard at the Sun Yat-sen, or Sen Yat-sun. This is Sen Yat-sen. This is the one of the Chinese leaders who was involved in overthrowing, I guess basically, let's put it this way, kicking the Europeans out, essentially. That's sort of what it comes down to. But they had the changing of the guard, and that was interesting. You couldn't see anything, but they put us in a perfect position so we could hear the movements, and it was all, you could tell, very slow. They were describing it, just all the little intricacies of the maneuver, and they do this every couple of hours. And once the changing is done, the soldier the ones that are there, they do not move, apparently, for like an hour and a half or something. They just stay completely still. I mean, it's tremendous discipline to do that. At that point, we needed coffee and a little sugar, so we went and had a nice snack at a restaurant in that same memorial building. And after that, we, thank goodness, went back to the hotel, got some good rest, got unpacked. And very shortly after that, we went out for took us out to a famous Japanese restaurant in Taiwan, and had a lot of different dishes, soups, and various things. I'm not real good at remembering the menu, but it was good food. Yeah, and I found out that between the Taiwanese and the Japanese, they have a setup between the two governments where they don't have to deal with visas and so forth. I guess they're able to visit pretty freely between the two countries. And I also found out on that first Sunday that the Taiwanese are now able to visit the Chinese mainland now. They can go take flights directly to Shanghai. So there, it seemed to me that the relations had warmed up quite a bit between the mainland and the Taiwanese. I mean, I guess it's cyclical. It could change, you know, depending on who's in power and so forth. But anyway, so let's see. Got the Japanese restaurant. Okay, so on Monday, we did something interesting. We went and had, we ate at a restaurant and had a typical Taiwanese breakfast. And that involved this rolled dough. It was they call it double fried dough, and it was it reminded me of maybe like a morning pizza or something that you might have if you were. I don't know if anybody's ever had that. It's a sweet basically dish, but not overly so. And that was served with soy milk, and it was pretty good actually. But they gave you a heck of a lot of it, you know. More than I had a hard time finishing the whole thing, but I did. Okay. Yeah, the whole. No. Okay, and then we went and visited the Taiwanese Digital Talking Book Association. That's the group that was actually putting on this seminar. And I'd had a chance to hear some of the voices. Ludi was her name, Ludi Lee, and we'd had a Skype conversation with she and another man named Swan. So I did recognize at least their voices when, you know, once we got there. But they're about the Taiwanese Digital Talking Book Association. They employ about 25 people, and one of their main functions is to produce Daisy audio. So that fit right in with me, since I'm working at Bookshare and we do a lot with Daisy text. And they had a nice office, probably maybe it seemed like it was a pretty good size, a couple thousand square feet maybe. And they presented us with a nice gift. They had a microphone for the computer that you can use to with Skype. And let's see. And then after that is when we visited the Taipei 101. We had lunch, and then we visited Taipei 101. Now, I was so fortunate. I was guided with a girl who was a senior at Ohio State University. Her name was Teresa, and, of course, you know, her English was just phenomenal. So had a wonderful tour of Taipei 101. They had these remote, these little receivers that they'd give you, and you'd walk around the building, and each station had a program associated with it, and they would describe what would be seen or what you would see out the window. And they had this thing available in many languages, so you could just, you know, set the remote control to the language of your choice, and you'd hear the program in that language. And interesting about Taiwan, Taipei, it's a city that is in what had formerly been a lake, a mountain lake, and it's actually surrounded by mountains. So what happened basically, the rivers dried up and the lake drained out, so that's the geology of it, and they explain all this in the tour. The elevator goes from the fifth floor to the 89th floor in something like 37 seconds. It's extremely fast, and it's like a pressurized cabin. They talk about it being like an airplane cockpit sort of, or airplane pressurized cabin. And in order to keep the building from swaying, they have what they call a wind damper. And this wind damper weighs 660 metric tons. And it's suspended between the 89th and the 88th floor. And so, it keeps the building from swaying. Don't ask me how, but it does. So that was the tour of the Taipei 101 building. Oh, the other thing I was very interested in about that building is it's set up so that if they need to display maybe emergency information or maybe something about holidays or I don't know, whatever they want. It's got these electronic something built into the windows that lets them actually display the messages on the side of the building. And I guess you can see it from all over the city. So I'd never heard of anything quite like that before. Then we had dinner at another Chinese restaurant hosted by Swan, and so that was that. As you can see, that day alone, there was just a lot of activity, you know, built into it. And we had some preparation for the the seminar, which was Tuesday and Wednesday. And the seminar was held in a real nice setting. It had everybody. There were microphones available. People had their listening devices for the language translation, and most of the seminar, a lot of the seminar taking place in it was being translated simultaneously, which was pretty interesting. So, and I'll get back to the seminar in a little bit, just to tell you a little more about that. On Thursday, it was really neat. We went and got to visit the Taiwan, I don't know the exact name, but it's the School for the Blind in central Taiwan. And it was a very nice environment. It really felt like a family atmosphere as far as the way that the students were being taken care of. And the facility was quite large. I'm trying to remember how many residents they had. Sam, do you remember how many residents they had at all?
About 100 or so.
About 100. Okay, yeah. It was okay. It was so interesting. We were taking us to the various classrooms, and they've got a lot of the same problems that we do here. A lot of them are multiply handicapped and so forth. So, I mean, some of them, it's just, you know, getting them to learn basic tasks. But it was such a shock. I was touring one of the classrooms, and I said hello to someone named Paul. Okay. And the guy starts speaking really in English without any kind of an accent or anything. And I'm thinking, well, wait a minute. Is this guy from the U.S. or, you know, what? Well, it turns out he's been learning English through the computer. That particular computer had a kind of refreshable Braille display I'd never seen before. I'd heard about them, never seen it. It uses solenoids to push the pins up and down instead of the piezoelectric that we normally have here. The thing weighed about 5 pounds, maybe 6 pounds. It was very heavy. And there was no controls whatsoever on it, but it was, you know, obviously completely driven by the computer. But this guy, I guess he's just been using his Braille display and his computer, and I swear the guy spoke, you know, he's like in sixth grade, and he's already got English totally down. And at the school, they had a gymnasium, which I enjoyed. Of course, we didn't feel too much like exercising a heck of a lot. It was, again, the heat was a little more than, you know, we'd expected. But they had all kinds of good accessible exercise equipment in there. And, of course, they had an accessible kitchen. And they had a nice performance, a musical performance for us, too, that they did. So we very, very, very nice, very nicely treated there at the school. Okay.
Go ahead. Add a little bit.
Sure, yes.
You know, the education for the blind in Taiwan, basically there are two schools, you know, public schools for the blind, and one in central part of Taiwan and one in northern part of Taiwan. And the one we went to visited is a private one. And the lady who started the school, Mrs. Chen, who came to Perkins in early 60s, she was trained at Perkins. The old lady, she was, greeting us. Yeah.
Yes.
Then Mrs. Chen, and that school now has turned into the most of the schools here in the States, mm-hmm. and in many parts of the world, now are more for the multi-handicapped, not just blind. Okay, yeah. Okay, yes. Okay.
So it was, again, very impressive school. And then Thursday afternoon was really pleasant. We got up into the mountains, and they have apparently some kind of a castle. They said it looks like a castle. Sometimes it was hard to know exactly, you know, with the language barrier. We had one situation where I got a kick out of it on back to Sunday morning. The woman I was with was describing what I thought she might be describing an art exhibit of like a mobile or something. Well, we found out later after we talked, it would turn out she was telling me about a windmill. So it just shows how language can get confused. But the gardens, they had these nice refreshing gardens, and there was a breeze, and we got to have a nice walk where it was very quiet, no traffic of any kind. And that was very nice. Oh, that was after our Italian meal. That's right. We had a oh, and you know, it was a wonderful Italian meal right there in central Taiwan. I don't know, you know, whatever, but and you know, after all the small plates and everything, I mean, I love Chinese food, really do, but after all of that, it just felt wonderful to have a big portion all at once on the plate, nice and hot. So I did get a kick, yeah. And so Friday, we just was basically a free day. We had another nice couple of escorts, and that's when we got to ride the subway and do our shopping, and the great thing was everything was taken care of. I mean, we really were treated like celebrities there. You know, the only thing I did let them know. Is that there was a tendency, I mean, you could hardly move. You know, if there was any question that you might be lost or that you might be, you know, possibly even remote possibility of running into anything, somebody was there. And they were just, you know, they'd almost literally grab you and, oh, are you okay? And, you know, let me help out. And, you know, well, you know, you just felt like finally, even during my talk at the seminar, I said, you know, you have to be so careful about overprotection, you know, because you appreciate the caring, but you want the freedom to explore on your own, to learn, to make mistakes, you know, to discover things on your own. And that was one thing that was very different. It was very, very much of a struggle for a lot of them to behave that way. So now the seminar itself was attended by about 150. Most of them were the local Taiwanese officials. And again, we had the speakers, the international speakers, and so I won't get into too much detail. But my basic message to them was: okay, blind people. Well, Richard started off; he was the first speaker, and he explained the various clients that he had worked with and how they had gotten jobs and. You know, what accommodations were made through the Department of Rehabilitation to help them, you know, get that employment. And he gave several examples of that. The Japanese fellow, he spoke a lot about the history of the blind in Japan. And, of course, they had also, for many centuries, been doing massage. And until only recently, it's begun to change. But their system is kind of different in Japan. It's similar to what they do in Germany. They have a quota system, essentially. And a company has a choice. You can either meet the quota, or if they don't want to, they have to pay into a fund that then is used to fund the equipment needs for those companies that have employed the blind. So it's an interesting system. In many ways, it does. A lot of these companies choose not to employ, and so there's really quite a bit of money to be spent on this access technology and accommodations. So, in some ways, the companies that do, you know, it's pretty easy for them to, you know, they don't have to worry about funding all this equipment and stuff. So it's just a different system, and I don't remember what Fred spoke about. Sam, what did Fred talk about? Do you remember Fred Leung? Hong Kong, did he talk about?
No, I don't.
We're not sure. It's okay. It's not that critical, but Hong Kong, yeah, I don't know. Okay. So I'm about done. I think my main message was, hey, you know, with the right accommodations and training, you know, the blind can do, you know, so many different things, and it's more just creativity both on the part of the individuals who are seeking the employment and the employers to figure out what's going to work. And I also mentioned that I felt that it's important to have someone who is motivated. Someone who is a creative problem solver, that always helps. Someone who realizes that when you're at work, you're there to work, to get the job done, not just to let somebody else, figure out what you're supposed to be doing and direct you, you know. So I think I was very clear that, that it was important to take a very active role in your job. And that's about it. Does anybody? Oh, yes, Sam has a question. Roger.
Roger, go ahead.
Hold on. Wait, need the mic.
Okay. I do hear it, huh? What's the question?
He's going to put
over
the microphone.
Okay, yes.
Do I recall correctly that Hibino is the guy from Osaka Lighthouse, Sam?
Yes. That's the one, Mr. Him, yes.
I think I remember him from one time when he was here visiting telesensory or something, and he said to me that he was actually a certified acupuncturist. Oh. And that he could train me to be an acupuncturist and get rich. And I thought that was interesting because he was head of rehab for this agency, the Osaka Lighthouse. Yeah.
Right. I think most of the that's blind in Japan, they first go through the traditional training in acupuncture or massage, and then they moved, then they climb up ahead, upper, and then they went to the regular, you know, college, and you know earn you know different degrees. I think, yeah, that's why he was he's a certified. Let me add one more thing. This is in Taiwan. I was each time I went back there to visit, I did see that the changes there. Let's say 40 some years ago when I first lost my sight, back then, not only the perception was not that good, but there was no accommodation, and very funny perception. They say, I try to take bus, by myself. I will ask people around, say, with this route 22? They say, yes. Then, back then, the driver is, at the front of the vehicle, the bus, and there was a conductor at the end, in the entrance, toward the end of the bus, the old day type. And I went up there, I want to confirm, this bus route 22, and could you tell me when you are approaching such and such stop? Then she would say, why don't you look yourself? And I said, I'm blind. Then she would say, stop teasing me. Okay, as I have a cane, well, stop teasing me, this type of thing. And Rob said, I mentioned that the subway. This time, Lily went with me. If I went alone, I heard that when I walk into the subway station, there'll be someone coming up and say, hey, sir, do you need help? Then, if I say yes, then that person would escort me to say, if I want to go to, Taipei Main Station. They say, come to this, track. And then they would, call someone in Taipei Main Station, say, such and such person is in vehicle number 3 or number 4, and they would meet you there. Well, it's kind of overwhelming, but on the other hand, it's a you feel that you don't get lost. Yes. Because it's very confusing. The subway is down, I don't know, the B5 or B6, very deep into the ground. And sometimes, in the underground, it's not easy to tell where you are. And as Rob said, this announcement made, inside the subway, in different languages there. That way we know, that if we are approaching our destination or not. Back in the old day, no. You just have to wish for the best. Okay. Yeah, thank you. Rob, yeah.
Oh, yeah, so does anybody have any questions?
Yes, I do. I was captivated by this Japanese notion that you were talking about the companies who didn't want to employ blind people pay into a fund.
Right.
Has that ever been tried in the U.S.?
I don't think that doesn't seem like a I don't think the U.S. I don't think they want to try anything like that.
Sounds very intriguing to me. Actually.
Well, it has its good points because, like I said, the blind in Germany, if they get a job, they're guaranteed they're going to get the very best equipment that they need. That's just part of the benefit that the company gets for hiring them. Yeah, that's exactly. Roger, he's got a good. He's saying that's why the German equipment a lot of times is so well, man. It's expensive as all get out, but it's very good, made very well.
I have two questions. The Italian food, was it like America, or was it different?
Well, I had lasagna, and it tasted like lasagna in a very good Italian restaurant here.
Okay. And the next question I have is, do the people who are blind, do they get Social Security or get something like that?
Here you go, Sam.
In a foreign country?
They do get some subsidy, but it's only a tiny amount. It's a very tiny amount. I think in Taiwan, still, it's a very family-oriented environment. Say, if someone lose sight, then either, you know, the immediate or the extended family, they kind of take care of that. That's still, you know, the practice there. But they do get a tiny amount of, you know, like SSI type of thing. Okay. Thank you.
So most people live with their families.
Raise your hand, Alan.
And as Roger says, a lot of them probably do live with the family. You know, they maybe never leave home.
I have a question, if I may. I know that Taiwan has a very well developed and rapid bullet train system. Did you get to ride on that at all?
No, we were hoping to, and then we were going to try to do it, but you know, they just kept us so busy, we just couldn't get there.
Here's Sam. You know, I stayed there, for 4 more weeks there, and because of some unexpected situation, I'm not going to go into that. But Lily and I did try the bullet train, and it was nice, quiet, and Lily was telling me, Sam, it says 220 kilometer, but it's a must be some sign, you know, that she could see that. And you don't hear anything.
Wow.
And it's so quiet and not rough, not jerky at all. And since Lily is the type of person, she doesn't want to figure out anything with herself. So she and I, we walk up to the ticket counter and said, we want to take the next train. And we didn't, in a book, we didn't reserve the seat. So we went there and said, oh, yeah, you know, next train leave in, 10 or 15 minutes. And they just say, oh, could you tell us in which track? Okay. Well, then they sent someone to escort us down there to the track. And, you know, we got on there. And, yeah, I really enjoyed it. It's very nice.
I have a question, Rob. I just want to know, did you bring us all something? No, but actually, I would like to thank both of you because I like Mike. Very intriguing presentation. Awesome, awesome description. I'm glad you guys had a wonderful experience, and thank you very, very much for sharing that with us. Thank you so very much.
No, thank you.
Okay, I hope that wasn't premature. Are you finished, Rob? Have you heard any more questions?
I'll just say a couple. I got just a couple more real brief things. A couple of intriguing things that I just noticed about the technology. In the hotel room, there was a kettle, and the kettle had a base, and you would set the kettle on the base. And so you put your water in the kettle, and you push a button. And the way it works is the heat is, it's induced, I assume it's some kind of induction, and the water in the kettle boils, but nothing gets hot. Nothing on the outside gets hot. So in other words, it's just an insulated kettle, and the heat is conducted. I'm sure it's done through magnetic induction, and so it's a great idea. The other thing I noticed over there is the, you know how they have those devices that dry your hands. You push the button and the fan motor comes on. Well, theirs were even better. They had it came. You put your fingers sort of in between these two lengthwise. So that both sides of your hands are being dried at the same time. You know, yeah. So it was great. So anyway, that's about all I've got. As you can see, I'm full of a lot of trivial nonsense. But
I have one more question. The blind, are they tested to see what kind of occupation would be suitable, or they just do whatever they think would work?
Well, my impression was that it's still in the very early stages. They had a number of speakers who were already employed, a couple of them at universities, various things, but I think they're really exploring possibilities, and testing was a question that came up. How are we gonna do fair testing? It's the same kind of stuff we deal with here. So yeah, they're still trying to figure out things as well.
And are there still countries in the dark days where they didn't really send children with special needs to school?
Well, again, I think they're really trying to overcome as much of that. There's one of the other functions of the Digital Talking Book Association there is they also do a computer training course that lasts about 3 months, I believe he said. And so they are, they're training individuals right now to get them ready for the job market. So I think things are changing there, and they're exploring.
But you didn't actually hear something like...
Okay, I have a question, if I may. What are the major causes of blindness in Taiwan?
Sam, do you know that? I assume they're...
Oh, that's a good question. I would assume could be macular degeneration or diabetes. Yeah.
Okay, Roger says it's time to wrap it up. So we'll see you later, everybody.
We are here, and any question, you can stop us. And we're here toward the end of the today. Yes.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. We'll break until 5 after 11. We'll come back for a business meeting then.